Episode 29, Matt Stell. Here we go. He's got a new EP coming out tomorrow. Actually, probably already out by the time you're listening to this. It's called Better Than That. You gotta listen to the thing. First of all, you probably already know some of these songs. It's got his number one hit, Prayed For You, on it. It's got Everywhere But On. It's got a new song, If I Was a Bar, which is just, it's a great rocking tune. And there's some new stuff on as well. There's a song called Sadie that personally I'm loving right now. It's kind of got a little bit of a darker feel than maybe some of his other stuff, a little more singer-songwriter-y. I love this song. You gotta listen to this thing when it comes out. Okay, this episode does not need much of an introduction. Let's just get into it. Let's dive in. Here we go. Episode 29, The Great Matt Stell. Let's dive in. Here we go. Are you in Nashville right now, or where are you?
I am. Yeah, Old Hickory, yeah.
Very cool, very cool. Man, you know, I know you're a big music fan, and I'm just curious. Van Halen passed away today. Are you a Van Halen fan?
Well, I mean, I wasn't a... I was a Van Halen appreciator, you know what I mean? Like, I knew what I was supposed to know about him, and, you know, I knew he played the solo on Beat It, you know, Michael Jackson's Beat It, and also, you know, things like that. But I knew he revolutionized guitar and how it was played, and he meant a lot to a lot of people. So, you know, another good one gone, man. This 2020, I tell you what, it's a real son of a bitch.
It's and the crazy thing to me is that somehow Keith Richards is going to outlive everyone. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
100%. I love that meme. It's like, we got to start thinking of the world we're going to leave behind for Keith Richards.
Right, exactly. That's so good. So I was hearing you say that one of the early bands that you loved was Drive By Truckers. Were you a big Drive By Truckers fan?
Yeah, man. Big. I discovered the Truckers in college, and you know, obviously the Isabel Truckers was that was a kind of the sweet spot for me. Like, Dirty South and Decoration Day. There's a song off of Southern Rock Opera that a Mike Cooley song called Zip City that changed my life, man. I guess for lack of a better way to say, kind of intimidated by music that wasn't like country music, because a lot of the songs didn't just like readily make sense to me, really. And but once I heard those guys writing songs with these vivid pictures and characters that I knew and identified with, they were just painting with colors that I recognized, you know? And that's really where I had a passion for songs, but man, that's really when lyrics started to, you know, to really do the heavy lifting for me. And even now when I write songs, you know, that's one thing that I aspire to do, is to write songs where the lyric is a lot of the lift, because I just love that. And the way that those songs hit me, you know, I want to do that for other people if I can.
That opening line of Zip City, where Mike Cooley sings, the opening line is, your daddy was mad as hell, he was mad at me and you went, that is such a great song. And it's a long song too. You really have to listen to it. You've got to follow the story of it.
Yeah. And it's not like, I mean, it doesn't have a chorus. It's not, it's like a vignette. Like it's not even a, there's no rules about it, but it's just, he's talking about being 17 and having one thing on your mind. And I just know this guy, you know, I've had those moments, man. The last line of that song, when he says, I got 350 heads on a 305 inch and I get 10 miles to the gallon. I ain't got no bad intentions. Oh, oh my God. It's like, so much was said to me, when you're from where I'm from and you live that life, there's so much packed into those lyrics, and changed my life, man, for sure. I mean, I can't really overstate it. That's a lot of the reason why I do what I do, or why I try to do what I do.
I always joke that I was the original Isabel fan, because I saw him, you know, I saw the band playing with him in the band. I was so young, and I feel like that band totally changed my life. So I totally relate with you on this. I mean, one of my favorite bands, Decoration Day, Dirty South, and then Southern Rock Opera, which Isabel wasn't on, but those three records are some of my favorites. Incredible.
Yep, 100%. So, I'm right there with you.
So tell me about, you were just on, like a month or two ago, you were on this like star-studded trip to Alaska with some buddies. Who throws that out? Who puts that trip together?
Man, that's a great question, Zach. I think, I actually think Craig Morgan had a lot to do with putting it together. And then he brought on Jimmy Allen and myself and Chris Bandy and the boys from Texas Hill. And man, we played three shows up there, you know, acoustic shows and, you know, distance and outside, and it's beautiful. And it was so much fun to play. It was really a great time, man. I really had fun. I stayed four extra days and hiked and fished and enjoyed Alaska, you know, because you never know how often you're going to get there. So a lot of fun, and I'll definitely be back.
What are these fans like when you're playing a show in Alaska? Like, are they starved for country music, or did you pick up on anything about the main characteristics, or are they just, you know, Alaskans, easy going?
You know, it's like you want to make, I honestly, it just seemed like any other place we go where people are excited to see some live music, you know what I mean? I don't know. I guess maybe the turnouts were all good. So, you know, I guess that could be a marker of them being, you know, starved and passionate for music. But, man, honestly, it just kind of felt like, you know, if I wouldn't have been staring at the background that I was staring at, and had it not been light outside at 11 p.m., then I wouldn't have known that I was anywhere else. But it was cool.
Do you just go B&A to Alaska? How do you get there? Do you fly there?
No, you go B&A to maybe Seattle. You end up in Seattle somehow, and then you take a plane from Seattle. Or I guess you could do Portland, but I think we went here, Chicago, Seattle. We flew to Fairbanks the first time, and then down to Anchorage. And, you know, maybe I was in DFW too. I don't know. But, yeah, it's not the
most – it's not direct.
No.
So – the last time I saw you play live was in Nashville at 12th and Porter for an industry showcase. And I think, if I remember correctly, like Randy Goodman, the head of the label, gets up and he introduces you, and the room is filled with industry members. I mean, you're a road dog at this point, but there's got to be a little bit of added pressure playing in that room, right? You've got the head of the label there. You've got the entire industry. I mean, do you get a little nervous playing that showcase?
Well, yeah, I mean, and also, you know, you don't know, you know, don't know if I do it different now, but I wouldn't worry too much about how I was going to do it. But yeah, I mean, you want to do a good job, and you also know that that you want to play to your audience, and you also know that, you know, it's different than your typical crowd. So it's like, are you asking them to sing and clap, you know, or are you trying to raise hell? And, you know, so, but at the end of the day, man, everybody's, if you're in music, you probably have a passion for it. So it's really, that's probably the best way to sort of attack it. But yeah, a room like that has the potential to get a little sterile, you know, but we had a great time. Shit. We had fun.
Do you treat it different? Like, is it harder to get people to clap along, or do you just leave that part out? Like, how do you treat it differently when you're playing to a whole bunch of industry folks, you know, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon?
Right. Well, you know, anymore, I probably wouldn't treat it a whole lot different other than just to acknowledge it. You know, then, you know, that was one of my first times doing that. And you know, you always want to play your audience. You always want to give your audience the best time, you know, playing your music. But at the same time, you got to figure that if these people have signed you to the record label and are working with you, that they're probably like, you know, they probably don't hate what your music. So, you know, just doing the best version of the songs out there I probably just kind of let the songs do more themselves than I typically would at a big show where it's the songs, but it's also the energy and the vibe, and it's the whole experience, you know?
At that point, you put the work in to put the set together, write the songs, you get up, you let it go loose. Man, your guitar player looks like a scary dude. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but big guy, big beard. I mean, how, like, when you're putting your band together, you're like, we've got the songs, we've got to get on the road. Did you have that band already, or do you audition people, or is it friends of yours? How do you put your band together?
Man, I might have auditioned one or two people, but I met Jace Rampage, we call him. I met him playing some shows, but he was with another band, and he, I basically was, my people who were in my band were friends of mine, and but they were more writers and things like that, and so, you know, it's just a difference there. And I guess to answer your question, I never really like auditioned those guys because I saw them play and I was just like blown away. And, you know, really anybody will tell you this, you know, in Nashville, you have to be good, you know, or you're just probably not going to be here that long. But then it ends up being what kind of person you are, what kind of hang you are. And, you know, we just have a great group of dudes, and they have a passion for the music. They have, you know, everybody's has their dream job, and we try to keep it in perspective as best we can. And Rampage is our band leader, and you know, he helps keep morale high, and not only, you know, not only playing guitar, but singing and doing leadership that way. And, you know, everybody that's on board with us are just really talented and really good people.
Do you ever, are you like the kind, like there's those classic stories of like Prince calling out every mistake and here's a wrong note and flashes a look, you know, do you run a tight ship with your band? You know, do you make sure they're in top form every night?
Well, I mean, I have no, that's Prince might be the GOAT. So, I mean, Prince can do Prince things, but no, man, I mean, typically I'm the weakest link in the band. You know, if it wasn't for writing the songs and maybe being able to sing a little bit, you know, ain't nobody hiring me to play guitar. So I just try to keep up as best I can. And really my job is a little bit, you know, different, you know, as a, you know, it being in the front there, whether you like it or not, you know, you are kind of responsible for entertaining. And so my head's usually there, and man, we let the loose ends drag because we're a rock band that I like to say we're not a garage band. We're like a barn band, you know, like
a little bigger than the garage. In a
barn. Yeah. Yeah. But we turn the amps up loud and we get after it for sure.
Who do you look for? Like, I know your first concert was Alan Jackson, Randy Travis, right? Like who do you look for to kind of steal ideas from as a front man? Like, is there anyone that, you know, you go, oh, that's a cool thing that so-and-so did, I should try that? Or, you know, how do you try to put that together?
Well, you know, I try to do it like I do musical influences and just kind of let them organically happen, you know, kind of throw them in the pot and see what the stew tastes like. I know that, you know, I spent so much time in basketball locker rooms that I'm no stranger to hip hop and that vibe. And you know, a lot of that almost feels comfortable to me, that kind of stage sort of presence a little bit. But there again, all my favorite artists are, you know, kind of singer songwritery too. So I don't like to get too far from the making the music part. So it's like equal parts. Well, I shouldn't say equal parts, but it's like, you know, Clay Walker meets Jay-Z or something. I don't know. Like, you know, you just kind of take what you can from everybody and see what happens.
Absolutely. Okay. So most industry people,
I steal a lot from Jimmy Allen because I think he's as good of a front man as there is in music, especially country music. So I pay attention to what Jimmy does.
What do you steal from Jimmy? I've seen Jimmy play two songs live and they were very rushed, so I feel like I didn't get to see him kind of be a front man. Like what do you steal from Jimmy?
Well, he's just smooth. He's confident. He believes in his songs. He believes in himself. He's not, you know, self-conscious in any way. And, you know,
he's got a lot of swagger.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And he's a talented guy, you know, singer, player, great songs. So, you know, he doesn't do a lot of second guessing. I would pick that out as what I would say Jimmy is really, really outstanding at. And because he's so good, it just kind of frees him up to be really good. And you know, he'll go anywhere he wants. And I, you know, it's a good lesson.
You ever say the wrong city?
You're
in Cleveland and you go.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I've done all of that stuff. Like I don't even like care to. I just know myself. My head's in the clouds all the time, and I'm always thinking about, I don't know, I'm just not super detail oriented, which is no excuse, but the things that do get away from me are the dates and the cities sometimes.
What type of show do you have more fun at? Is it, you know, if you're supporting someone and you can show up, rock out, and leave, and now the rest is someone else's responsibility, or when you're doing a headline show, you get a little more time, but now everything's kind of on you to, you know, fuel the energy for the entire night versus a headline show versus a support show? Is there any differences with the energy, or is there one you prefer?
Well, there's differences in how you approach it because they feel different. You know, if I'm in an arena playing in front of, you know, Keith Urban or Chris Young or something, and people are coming to see him, and I know this is my chance to try to win over Chris Young fans, that's a different thing than going to a city and hoping you sell some tickets and that people have a good time when they come to your show, you know? So it's a different kind of, it's a different kind of demand. You know, I really had my first experience doing headline tour stuff this year. You know, early this year is when we did our, we were on tour with us and Chris Bandy and Ray Fulcher. And I know, and yeah, I guess I would, I mean, they both have pros and cons because, you know, there's no way I'm playing in any arenas right now without opening up for somebody. So, you know, hopefully one of those days comes, but they both have their challenges and they both have their rewards. I also love finishing a show, hanging out and watching another show that I'm a big fan.
That's fun, right? Because you get to, you feel like you're done for the night. You can kind of kick back a little bit and then you go see a show like someone like Chris Young or Keith Urban, who puts on a massive show.
Yeah. Like, you know, I was at Watershed last year and I think every band that was there was standing side stage watching Brothers Osborne and they're obviously fantastic and kind of a band's band. And yeah, I mean, just, again, it's like a passion for music. Everybody's got it, and you know, it can fizzle a little bit, but I know right now, I think everybody's shopping it a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you this: most people in the industry kind of have this like cliche line where they're like, if you're debating between becoming a musician or a doctor or a lawyer, you should go become a doctor or a lawyer and not do music. Now, you almost went to med school, I think a lot of people know, decided to go the music route. Do you ever look back and kind of, I mean, you ended up not going to med school, but do you ever look back and kind of miss it or almost be like, man, I wonder what would have happened if I got to med school? Do you ever look back and think about that, or are you so past that at this point?
I've thought about what my life would look like right now if I got that pre-medical program done and was in med school. You know, my life would look quite a bit different, but, it was really, you know, that sort of avenue presented itself pretty late. It wasn't like I was dead set on doing that and then music got in the way. You know, I was dead set on doing music and then looked around and was like, well, maybe I won't get to do music like I want to. And what else would I do? So, you know, that sort of medicine was, or that route, let's just say, was a bit of a plan B. And, so there wasn't any second guessing once I got the opportunity to do this. Now I say that having been very fortunate in having a debut single, you know, do well and having this second single, have a shot at maybe being a, you know, the top five or something like that, you know, maybe number one. So, it's easy to kind of sit here and say that now, but, yeah, I don't feel like I made the wrong decision, for sure.
What gave you the confidence to, because I feel like everyone has that kind of dip that they're in where it's like, I've either got to fold it up or keep pushing. You obviously kept pushing. What gave you that confidence? Did you just think you couldn't live with yourself otherwise?
Yeah. I mean, I felt like I could do it and I knew I had to give myself a good chance. There were voices in my life that supported me. And, you know, there were some that would probably have preferred to see me do something else before this all worked out. But, you know, like my mom was always very supportive, even when believed in me, even, you know, when I started to falter. And I just, you know, I don't know if you're passionate about something and you're really getting after it and trying to do it, you know, it's there's really no decision to make. And, you know, that's just what I did. And, you know, luckily it worked out when it did. I don't know, like, even the people that gave me advice to do other things, I wasn't like mad at them or anything like that. It was people that cared about me that thought they were doing me a favor and telling me something hard. So I respect that. And, you know, it's not always the best idea to follow through, but I was going to make sure to hit a stone wall before I quit. And I mean, I felt like I was getting close to that before it happened, but yeah, man, just sticking with it and yeah, believing in yourself and believing in the work you're putting in. And it's cliche, but you know, that's just kind of how it is.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening and hope you're enjoying the show. Some of you may know that I run an industry newsletter called the Nashville Briefing. Really takes you to the front row of everything happening in our industry. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to nashvillebriefing.com to subscribe. Also, if you're enjoying this show and specifically this episode, please feel free to give us a 5-star review on your podcast listening platform. Thanks so much. Now back to the show.
Now, on your dad's side, you have a couple siblings. Do they look up to you and think you're a total badass? I mean, my brother worked in entertainment, and I thought he was an absolute legend. And he's 10 years older than me. But, I mean, do they look up to you and you know, freak out about it?
I like to say maybe in some respects their kids do. You know, their kids are fans. You know, it's cool for them to go to school and you know, hear somebody on the radio. You know, my family though, you know, they support it, but you know, I'm just Uncle Matt, or you know, just brother. You know, it's not too terribly different, except with the kids. Their kids are a lot of fun about it.
Do they like brag to their friends and they're like, my uncle's on the radio? Like, yeah, I'd be freaking out about it.
Yeah, they have a good time with it. And my nephews are all good kids and they're fun. And so I say nephews, I have five nephews and actually six. My sister just had a baby. And my brother adopted a little girl. So there's six nephews and a little girl, and my brother also fosters a girl. So there's lots of them.
Holy cow, that's very cool. So how do you meet Ash Bowers? Because he's kind of like your big guy, and now he took over the label. He's running Nashville South. It's like, this guy's in everything. How do you meet this guy?
Man, I met him through two mutual songwriter friends of mine, Autumn McIntyre and Larry McCoy. And they were writing with Ash one day, and he mentioned he was looking to sign some artists. And, you know, they recommended me, and he listened. And that was pretty much how it went down. And, you know, I owe them, especially Autumn. I really owe her a lot of gratitude for going to bat for me. And I learned a lot from her in terms of writing songs. She's a great songwriter. And you know, just good to have good friends, but that's how I met him. That's how I met Ash.
He was your publisher, was your manager, and mm-hmm. then it was just announced that he's taking over Record South.
Mm-hmm.
Having someone in all those positions, it's fairly relatively unique. What does that look like? Or like, yeah, the advantages that come from that? Like, how does that work?
Really, there could be that he's not. I'm not involved on the label side that he is, though. I'm with my deal is a joint venture with Records New York and Sony Arista. So my label is a JV with Arista. So he's not like him being label president of Records South or Records Nashville is not doesn't have really any bearing on me. But him being my manager, and you know, we wrote Pray For You together, and he co-produced my projects together. I mean, he's just a great guy, and he's learned a lot. I've learned a lot from him, and he's always done what he said he was going to do. He's so talented in so many different ways, and you know, you're lucky to be around good people and competent people that believe in you. So you know, he's never faltered on that. He's done everything he said. So has Steve Williams, his business partner on the management side, and was publishing. So I have a great team. I'm very lucky.
Who's your first call? Like, if you have to make a big decision or you need advice or, you know, something's happening, do you call Ash? Is that the guy that you pick up the phone first for?
Ash and Brendan Rich. He's really my, at this point, my sort of go-to. I hesitate to say day-to-day because he's not my day-to-day, but day-to-day, I do deal with him the most managerial-wise. They kind of divide the roster up. And so Brendan and I work a lot, mostly together. So Brendan and Ash and I, if a big decision needs to be made, that is that's the call. The three of us.
That's the call. You guys hop on a call and you work through it. That's the and Ash's guy. I mean, he's seen it from every freaking angle. He's been the artist, the producer, the publisher, the manager. Now the label head.
I learned a lot from him without having to pay tuition or make the mistakes, because he's done all that on so many different levels. And, you know,
does he give you any advice from the artist side of thing? Like, you know, you're touring the country, you're doing these radio interviews, playing around. And does he give you any piece of advice or anything he says that stands out that you've taken with you?
I mean, he's told me, you know, there's just really some more overarching things, like because some of that are lessons that you just learn, but you know, things like he's learned is like you kind of take what the industry, you know, kind of gives you, and you know, for me, that means they gave me a chance to be an artist. So you know, it's really kind of lean all the way in on that. And, you know, he's able to deal, because he was on my side of a label situation, you know, he's able to see things, and now he's on the other side, you know, he's able to see things from both perspectives. And you know, that's always so handy when you have a diversity of viewpoints. Definitely learned a lot and picked up a lot from him and do all the time.
Absolutely. Okay, so by the way, Barry Weiss, who runs records, obviously, in New York, huge industry legend from Jive Records. I mean, kind of an industry icon. Yeah. When you, what's this guy's energy? When you meet this guy for the first time, like what's his vibe?
Man, he's just, his vibe is extrovert, energetic, you know, competent, confident. He is obviously intelligent, and he, you know, he saw something in me that, you know, nobody else saw or were willing to take a chance on. So, you know, it's hard for me not, it's hard for me to understate how big a deal that is, you know, for a guy to cold call Ash and be like, hey, we see this song, you know, Pray For You was out, you know, independently. We put it out as a publishing company, and this guy calls and say, hey, you know, we'd like to work out a deal. I'm from Jive Records. I've done everything from, this is Barry talking, you know, he's had everybody from NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears. And, you know, now the record side of things is mainly hip hop and, well, I shouldn't say mainly, but everything you think but country. And, but hey, we want to take a chance on a country record. We want to put a staff together. We think this can work, this hip hop model of finding things that are bubbling up and then really trying to give them a push. And I mean, it's just vision. He's a visionary and kind of changed the game in a lot of ways. I think the model that we have is something that that people are doing and see that it would work. And I mean, I think that's just a testament to his kind of leadership.
Did you trust out of the gate? Was there any hesitation that this guy could work at country? Because working at Nashville country record is kind of a unique thing. Did you go, this guy's a legend, he'll figure it out? Or was there any, you know, was there any hesitation early on, like you know, going with a label in New York to work at country record?
Well, I like the idea of being independent because I've been an independent thinker and independent artist and just sort of had an independent streak from coming from the kind of music that we were just talking about being into. That I was never been afraid of that because I knew that it doesn't matter what name is on the letterhead. It matters if you get a passion for what you're doing and if they have the resources to do it. And I knew we had resources. I knew we had passion and I knew he was able to execute. And, you know, it wasn't, I really didn't have much expectations because, you know, our other options were not as desirable as that was. And, as what Barry was offering. So I never, second guessed it, got in the way. I was just a good soldier and let the people that were experts tell me how to do it, you know, in terms of getting your music out there. Cause I mean, you know, I had a song out there I believed in and I was going to do anything I could to make it successful. And I think with that attitude, with the passionate people and, you know, I like to think we had the, you know, the music too. I mean, that's the huge part of it. You know, we were able to make something work and I really never second guessed it.
Does he bring that? I mean, he's such a like an old school industry figure and him, yes, like.
Yes and no. I mean, he is old school because he's been there and done it. But he's a very forward thinking, progressive
guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, his experience being in hip hop, you know, he basically took that model to, you know, as best I can understand, you know, took that model and did it in country music and you know. So he's been there, done that. He has the pedigree, he has his success, but he's also not dogmatic or mired in the past or someone who waits on other things to get done. Like he gets things done. And, you know, I obviously think a lot of him because of the success that we've had and the chance he gave me.
And they've got such a cool roster. He's got such a cool A&R. I mean, Len Sell, of course, who's unbelievable. I mean, there are some awesome people that they're assigning over there, of course, yourself, right? Is there ever a holiday party? Do you guys ever get together, the records crew?
We'll get together, you know, since they're in New York, we'll get together sort of around anytime we have business up there and spend time together. And that's always a blast and to catch up. Because, I, you know, not only is it just Barry, but his whole staff up there, you know, Sarah and David and the whole crew. that are up there. I always look forward to spending time with those guys and trying to be, you know, trying to be something that they can work with and staying true to my artistic sensibilities, but in understanding that I got a home there that allows me to do those kind of things.
Absolutely. So, okay, this new EP, Better Than That, I was listening to this thing the past couple days. I mean, this record is rock solid. I'm loving the song Sadie, which I've heard is one of the few outside cuts that you actually took on this record. It's one of the first outside cuts. I love that kind of stutter thing you do when you say Sadie. I always love that in music. I don't know why, for some reason.
Yeah, it's kind of ear candy, man. Yeah, for sure.
Say that again. It's kind of what?
It's kind of ear candy a little bit. You know, it's that song. Just, you know, talking a little bit about it. You know, it is. I moved to town to be a songwriter. But now that I'm on the artist side of it, I have to be an artist songwriter, and there's no such thing as songwriters but artists that don't cut out songs, you know what I mean? And you know, I knew that if I cared as much about songs as that I said I did, that I had to let the best song win at the time. And because I had success with Pray For You, and because I had a project coming, I was getting pitched some really great songs from people, and I ended up cutting three songs that I did not right, which I've never done before. And Sadie is one that actually my manager Brendan sent to me and was a big believer in. And usually when he says, usually he says something in terms of like kind of an A&R kind of thing, him or Ash, I usually really put some stock in that. And I heard it and I loved it and cut it and we thought it came out cool. And the song was cool. I love it because it's not what I would necessarily do myself.
It's a little darker sounding here. It's a little more.
Yeah, it's like it has a little bit more of like a, I guess, a pop edge, you would say. But like it's not off in my opinion. Like it's not off brand, but it is off of what I would just the starting point that I would come from. And that's what we need is something fresh and new. And, you know, when I heard that song and how it works and the lyric is sparse, but it does some lifting and you know, have a song you could just kind of listen to and enjoy how it moves and enjoy that melody and let the melody work is a lot of fun.
It's great. What's important to you in the studio? Do you go in, do you make sure like your vocal sounds right? Is that the most important thing? You make sure the band's sounding good. What do you pay attention to when you're recording?
Well, you really try to pay attention to all of it. I mean, usually vocals aren't cut the same day that you're tracking the band, you know, typically.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so like work just gets, you know, it just gets, what do you call that? Assembly line, basically, you know. And so we track with the band and it really, you know, you can get down in the weeds, but it's just, you gotta make sure the vibe is right. You know, that's really what you're going for and make sure everything's kind of serving a point and it makes sense of what you do, but it's also fresh. But to your point, a vocal might be the most important thing besides the song. Like if you had just a regular track but a great vocal, that's going to do a whole lot more for you than the other way around, I feel like. So
With like Pray For You, I mean, how many days do you spend in the studio on that song? Do you go in once and you get the basic tracks, you go in the next day to lay vocals and you're done? Does it happen that quick?
Pretty much. I mean, by the time it gets, you know, you'll go in, you'll track it, you'll probably track a bunch of shit, and then you'll go sing it, and then maybe you'll have some overdubs of, you know, I want to, you know, this guitar part, I'd like it to do a little different, or let's get, you know, a keypad or, you know, whatever. And from there, you know, a lot of where the cake gets baked is in mixing. And so, you know, Jim Cooley, who mixes all of my stuff and a lot of what's on country radio, is one of my favorites, and we communicate really easily. And so I can give him some direction, you know, that'll get him in the ballpark. And then if I need to, or Ash, you know, cause we do it together, you know, if we need to pull strings, dial things back, reimagine something or whatever, we do. And then, at the end of the day, as long as that vocal's got to be, that vocal's got to sit in there like a ring inside of a ring box, really, you know? So, that's a lot of how that gets done.
Do you ever listen back to one of these songs and do you ever notice like little imperfections or little things? Like when I hear it sounds so perfect, like to me, all music that makes it to any level of success sounds so perfect to me. But as the artist, do you listen back and go, oh my God, that imperfection? Or
Or I do it differently live because I like it better the way I do it live. You know, there's a, I'll give you a great example in Prayed For You. The way that I say faith in the chorus bothers me every time I hear it now. I kept my faith like that old King James. So when I sing it, I make sure faith and James kind of rhyme because that sounds better. And I wish I would have done that initially, but you know, it's rock and roll, man. Even when it's a country love song, you know, it's rock and roll, man. It's all about the vibe. So
I'm going to go back and listen to that. That's a good tip. This video for If I Was a Bard that came out a couple months ago, mm-hmm. that was a fun video to watch. How do you record that? Do you run through a whole take as yourself and then you change and you do another take and you spend all day in that bar? How do you actually pull that off?
Yeah, you sort of do that, but you really go scene to scene doing that. So, you know, the scene where the band's playing, I do a take of guitar, a take of drums, a take of fiddle. Okay, that's the one thing. When it goes to, like, the dartboard, you know, I do a take of each guy. When it goes to the bar, I do a take of each guy there. And it's not the whole song necessarily. You know, maybe we'll do a verse chorus in each kind of place. And then at the end, when they put it together, you know, you have the whole song. But that's basically how that went. Dustin Haney is the director and the guy. That was his brainchild. And we had a whole lot of fun together doing that video.
Man, that was a fun video. Does that take a longer time than other videos? Like, is that a pain to shoot? Were you kind of frustrated with it?
No, not really, because, I was just glad to be out of the house. It was during COVID, and we had to do it. That's one of the reasons that it's still during COVID, but it was during, like, initial sort of lockdown and you know, before, back in phase one, you know, type stuff. And so I was glad to be out doing anything creative. And we also didn't have to go anywhere. You know, a lot of times with music videos, you're going to have several different, you know, locations. Even if you get two locations, that's going to take all day anyway. And I would rather take all day doing what I did and having fun with it than you know, moving around. But it was a long day for sure. It was like 7 to 7.
Oh, man. It's a fun video, though. You don't have to pay it. You don't have to pay anyone else. How do you get in the in the Pray For You video, how do you get Savannah Chrisley in that video? Who makes the call to get her in the video?
Well, that was between her and Todd Chrisley. Todd's, man, he's what a great guy. He's been really great to me. And, you know, my people, Ash, reached out and the story that Todd tells is, you know, they kind of passed on it because they were so busy. And then he accidentally opened the wrong email one day and heard the song and started playing. And he was like, oh, wow. Let's try to make this work because he believed in the song. So, you know, Todd and Savannah have been great to me and been great. I met them that day and they've been great friends. And, you know, especially Todd, you know, he checks in on me all the time. And he's so funny, man. He's one of my favorite people.
It's a crazy show to watch. It's so fun. And it feels very, I mean, it is reality and scripted, but it feels very real. I don't know. It's like there's especially that grandma fit character. Like it just feels, I don't know. It feels like I know those people.
Yeah, for sure.
So where do you get your stage clothing from? Like your shirts, obviously you're a tall guy. Is it hard to find stage clothing or is it pretty easy?
It is. I have a stylist that helps put all that stuff together because it's not something I am good at, nor is it something I enjoy doing. So she kind of gets the vibe and makes the look match, you know, we figured out how to make the look match the sound, match the personality or try to. And so, yeah, I'll typically we go to a photo shoot or something like that. It'll be time to get some new clothes and she'll help me there picking stuff out and making sure everything fits. And it's good to have a ladies, eye on all that stuff too when you're
what's the Matt Stell look like? T-shirt with a button up over it, or like a plaid shirt, kind of a hat, always jeans, boots, like yeah, what are the essentials?
I mean typically the essentials are usually wearing a cap, but you know, it's going to be something between the country that I where I'm from, you know, like the rural where I'm from, but then how much time I've sort of spent in you know, and around basketball and hip hop and I will say urban culture, but kind of in that flavor. So, you know, we kind of mix those two things of like, you know, if you could, you know, think about, you know, it might be boots in a, it might be boots in a designer tee or something, or just like not designer, but like, you know, boots in like a, it looks like kind of a whatever city looking tee, or it might be Air Force Ones and a pearl snap, you know? So we just kind of, that's the line we sort of walk, and it ends up being, it ends up feeling pretty comfortable to me.
Is that, is being, this may be a weird question, but being tall is kind of like, it's kind of like a part of a brand. I mean, Alan Jackson's really tall. Blake Shelton's really tall.
Yeah,
totally. That, do you like that? Do you like that you kind of stand out? You walk, like, I remember seeing Kiss at Madison Square Garden with their boots on, and I remember thinking they looked huge because they were like a foot taller than, you know, other concerts I had seen. Like, you, I bet you, you command it, you know, it is, I bet it's a little bit easier for you to command a stage being the tallest one on it.
A lot of the stages that I play are so small that I have to kind of like be careful that I'm not going to hit my head. I mean, some are, but there's this place in Ohio that I love called the Dusty Armadillo, and the stage is, I'm not exaggerating, the stage is that far from my head. I can't even raise my guitar up because I'll break the neck on it. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I never really think about being tall, to be honest with you. Like, it doesn't cross my mind, and then until I have to sit down in an airplane or something. And then
I was gonna say, is that the like, what's a weird thing about being tall that we wouldn't think about? Like, saying you're, I mean, you're not even that. I mean, you're tall, but like, what, like airplane, sitting at an airplane, is that the
It sucks. Buying jeans sucks. Buying shoes can suck. But I mean, I don't want to complain too much. I mean, it's just like, I, you know, I also got to play a lot of basketball because I was tall, and you know, so it is what it is.
I would trade. If I was tall, I'd take the tall card. Let me ask you something. You're on a boat. You have to save one person, George Strait or Garth Brooks. Who are you going to save? Only one fits in a lifeboat.
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I guess I'm probably – maybe I'll drown and let them both have the boat.
Let them both. That's the kind of guy you are right there.
Exactly. They'll be like, well, he died a hero's death. And maybe I'll get one of those bumps, like, you know, the 27 Club, you know, you become a legend and everybody listens to your music that way. So that's what I'm
like. I feel like that's a little bit of a cop out, but I'll let you have it. Cause I mean, I get, the EP is out, Better Than That. What do you hope people listening? What's the I Love Sadie. I think that's an awesome song. A couple of these songs are out already. What do you hope people go to or listen to or check out? Any special moments musically that stand out? Or,
you know, I guess I'm still in the minority, but I love to go to a project that I like and listen to it, you know, kind of top to bottom. And especially, you know, some project like this that's fairly different from song to song. I mean, it kind of, we have a vibe and a sound and a thing that we're doing, but I wouldn't think that all of those songs sound the same necessarily. And, you know, especially we touch on a lot of different, you know, subjects, whether it's, you know, heartbreak or love, or it's, if it's the pros and cons of being from a small town and just kind of the human condition, where you're from. And, you know, or like, you know, Sadie, if you're in this kind of limbo with somebody you care about and you really don't care, if, you know, if your feelings get paid back, you're just excited, you know, you just want them to know that you're going to be there for them, that kind of thing. You know, my hope is that people would listen to it and find their, find something that means something to them, you know, because that's one thing that all those songs have is a real genuine place. Even the stuff that I didn't write, you know, is something that I'm trying to say. You know, hopefully that's something that people can dive into and come away with what they need in the moment, you know.
Absolutely. Man, I'll let you run. I appreciate you taking the time. What's the thing? Because, I've heard you say that you learned guitar in college because you were practicing basketball and you had time after practice, so you picked up a guitar. Now we've got a lot of free time on our hands, relatively, obviously. Are you trying to get better at guitar? Do you know any musical things, or what? How, I mean, you're not writing songs. How are you spending your time right now?
Well, I am writing a bunch of songs, and that's one way. Yeah, that's one way that I'm. That's the main way that I'm spending time, because I feel like, you know, that's the value add that I can bring. You know, I feel like, especially when I'm writing for myself, you know, I have a perspective and love to write songs and can bring something to the table there. I have played a lot of guitar and become a little bit more formidable of a guitar player, especially in like an acoustic sort of setting. I should probably be better than I am, but I've made some progress there, and I keep thinking that I'm going to really have a breakthrough on the golf course, but man, it just comes and goes. It just comes and goes, Zach. So I'll be excited for it to come again, because it's my golf game has been hot garbage for a while.
The golf, that's the big one. What any TV shows you're binging, or any TV shows?
Man, I watched Social Dilemma the other day.
What'd you think of that?
I think that I was familiar with Tristan Harris, the guy that was behind that. You know, I was he's kind of been, you know, when he was I guess an ethicist, you would say, I guess at Google, and I was familiar with his work. I really thought that was a really masterful way to show people the problems that social media has and continues to cause and will keep causing until we do something about it, because it seems as though it's this abstract thing, and you know, who gives a damn if they take your data and then advertise stuff that you want to buy? Like, you know, people thought the printing press was going to destroy the world, and you know, to hear those arguments dealt with and to see that it's such asymmetrical warfare in terms of these companies versus you know, the consumer of the product, or I guess, you know, as they would say, we are our attention is the product. I thought it was a really, really great way to illustrate why we have to do stuff and do it quickly, and the cost that we as a society and as a world are paying for, you know, the neglect of understanding the cons of all this technological pro.
I immediately turned off all the notifications on my phone right after watching it. I turned everything off except like text and email.
100%, man. I try to do that and use a VPN, you know, so that I don't get ads that are necessarily as targeted and things like that. And you just do what you can. You know, it's going to be, you know, the change. I think it's the most popular film on Netflix over the entire world. So I have to think that that there's going to be some positive change now that people can really put a face and a point on what is actually the problems here, because they are way more serious than it seems.
The Social Dilemma. Anything else? Any other TV shows you're checking out?
Oh man, I'm about to start season two of Cobra Kai. I really like season one, and it seems like there's something else that I've been watching, or that I watched Alone. I don't know if you're familiar with this show where they put you in the Arctic for however long you can stay there with 10 items, and whoever stays the longest wins, like isolated.
And I picture that being you and Jimmy Allen and Chris Bandy in Alaska. That's
it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No, that show's been great. Really enjoyed that one. And I'd say the Social Dilemma really sticks out as something important, though.
Are you a good cook? Do you cook a lot during this?
No, I don't. I might, I can do like three things, and I typically just don't. Like I eat a lot of, I got a Bojangles right around the corner, although they never have chicken done. So I drive up the road to Chick-fil-A a lot of the time, or I'll, you know, grab a rotisserie chicken from the grocery store or something like that. But it's pretty much just like, if I'm not making a steak, then I'm probably eating a peanut butter sandwich.
That's the man. I go through so much peanut butter; it's absurd. I'm not even kidding. I go through jars of it. It's unbelievable.
It's quick. It's easy. It's good for you.
Fills you up.
Yep. Fills you up. Yep.
I go through jars of peanut butter. Well, that seems like as good a place to end as any on the jars of peanut butter. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time, buddy. The record will be out. I think it'll be out today when this comes out. Better Than That. Stream it now. Check it out. Watch the music videos. You've got some really fun music videos.
Awesome.
Easy to watch. I mean, I love these music videos, man. Keep them coming. And yeah, man, can't wait to see. What we've got the EP coming out. I mean, that's huge. Anything else we should be on the lookout for or should be checking out?
Man, we got EP coming out. You know, we got Everywhere But On is it's making its ascent up the charts. We're kind of in the home stretch, you know, hoping to ring the bell on it. So, yeah.
That's do you look at the charts every day? Like, do you look at them religiously, or you just, you know, your team lets you know what's happening?
It doesn't do any good. You know, it's like, there's nothing. If there's something I can do, they'll let me know. I've already given them the music. I trust them. So they know that I'll do anything. So
do you read reviews, like when people were reviewing your song, et cetera, like, or, you know, concert reviews or anything? Do you seek those out and read them?
No, not really.
Not really?
Not really. I have come across reviews before. I don't think of Everywhere But On, but I have of Prayed For You. And you know, it's like, I just think music is just such a subjective thing. And I feel like there's not a ton of people that are super qualified to talk about music in that way necessarily. I mean, I'm sure there are, but you know, everybody's like what you like. It's never been a better time to be a music fan than right now, because you can get anything you want all the time. And, I don't read a ton of reviews, but you know.
Who's the person, like your team aside, your direct team aside, who's the person that they recommend you, like a song or an album or an artist, you'll go listen to it and you'll trust their judgment, you'll check it out?
Oh, a lot of like my writer friends, you know, if they're into somebody or into something cool, you know, I definitely check out, you know, my buddy Joe, if he likes a band or a song or something, I'll definitely check that out.
Is that Joe Fox?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got good taste. He's got good taste.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does.
Good guy. Good guy. Unreal. Well, stay well, buddy. And I can't wait to see you at a show and see you rocking it live whenever we can.
Hey, man, appreciate the chat. I agree. We'll make up for lost time. Owe you a beer.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon.
There you have it. Episode 29, Matt Stell. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks to Matt for taking the time to talk. The new EP, Better Than That, out now. Go stream this thing. Trust me on this. Again, Sadie, that's my pick on this record that I'm listening to right now and absolutely loving. You gotta check this thing out. Okay, that's it. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can go to NashvilleBriefing.com to subscribe to our newsletter, and you can follow us on socials, everything @NashvilleBriefing. Thanks again for tuning in, and we will see you next time. Bye.